welcome back to Voices from the Frontlines. We have on the phone Tom Gotu from the Indigenous Environmental Network to talk to us about what's the tactical game plan down at the UN meeting in Montreal. Welcome to the show, Tom.
Yes, thank you. I'm glad to be on the call here.
Well, Tom, why don't you give us, just give the listeners what's happening at this moment that's leading up to this UN climate conference in terms of your work and your objective?
Well, we're part of a people's movement that's globally where, you know, in our participation in previous UN Conference of the Party meetings and this climate agenda, we've been doing this for a couple years. You know, we've been at these different meetings in different locations of the world, and we're finding that a lot of the grassroots people of the world don't even know what the negotiations are about. And one of the most serious issue that's coming up, and it's here now, it's concerning the trading of hot air, carbon trading, emissions trading, and how the answers that the industry and the industrialized governments are coming up with is a market-based solution. Mm-hmm. And that's something that, at least for indigenous peoples, market-based solutions has never been an answer to our issues. It's clearly connected to imperialism. It's connected to colonization issues. And that's something that, you know, we're involved here. We're part of a network of social activists, environmental activists here, people in Montreal. And so, in fact, I'm just came out of a meeting where we're talking about some strategies here around this issue.
Well, Tom, why don't we talk a little bit about, just give the general public, I mean, we know a little bit of the concepts of emissions credits and even sort of green trading that's happening, or at least in conversations around Kyoto Accords, around carbon trading. Can you talk to the public what that really means in actuality?
Well, what that really means is it doesn't really address the main issue that we're facing, especially here in the United States and Canada, is that we're consuming too much energy. We're dealing with the issue now where we have an addiction to consumption, an addiction to use energy and to waste energy. So we're not dealing with that issue. We're using too much electricity. It's basically the issue that many of our indigenous communities are saying to us, our traditional peoples. So what happens here is that carbon trading is a mechanism that's being used now in these international agreements to where, say for an example, industries of the north, they can make investments in tree plantations of the south, with the understanding that trees absorb carbon, and by industries investing in tree plantations, that it's a trade-off. It presents an offset culture that really is full of flaws and concerns about accountability. If we have big companies like Enron that were caught manipulating the books, you know, we have this big, not multi-million, but some people say it's a billion-dollar industry in carbon trading, you know, and how do we actually know there's going to be a retirement of these trades where corporations will continue to increase fossil fuel production? And in the meantime, they're investing in this so-called trade-off and getting credits by putting money into tree plantations in the south. But we don't see some of the social, environmental, and human rights impacts in those tree plantations in the south. We got community people here who have come to Montreal that have been relocated on these eucalyptus GMO tree plantations in Brazil. And, you know, and people don't see these things in the north. And so we're trying to provide this message that there's human rights violations with these solutions that are being cooked up by the industry and industrialized countries.
Well, the question I have for you on that one, Tom, is that on some level, though, this is also a debate even in the movement, right? Because it's not just the administration or multinational corporations that are promoting carbon trading, but even in even on certain segments of the environmental movement, this is one of the big, or even in the climate justice movement, for lack of another word, this is some of the debates that are happening, right?
Well, debate, yes. I mean, the debate needs to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we're concerned that people have been locked out of, the people of the world have been locked out of these debates. And, you know, one thing that's a benefit in the environmental justice movement is the principle that we speak for ourselves, community mm-hmm. people, grassroots communities. And, most of our organizations and entities within the environmental justice movement have a constituency. And that means that we're accountable to these decisions that we're making as part of the EJ movement. A lot of environmental organizations are not accountable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's some environmental organizations that caved in, during the Hague a couple of years ago, leading into Bonn. I'm talking about different significant, time in the negotiations of these UN meetings. When those environmental groups were hanging in there with our indigenous people, when we're saying, you know, our indigenous peoples are going to be negatively impacted in these sinks, called sinks projects, mm-hmm. these tree plantation projects, and these CDMs, that it may be a ripoff for us, that we're not going to benefit from these. And some of these environmental organizations were hanging in there with us, supporting us, but there was a compromise that was very significant back a couple years ago. So yes, you know, there is a debate there, and we're here to have that debate and find some common ground on how we can get back on track here and really look at some real answers on how to deal with this climate issue.
So we're talking to Tom Goldtooth on Voices from the Frontlines. Tom is speaking to us from Montreal, Canada, which is the site of the UN conference, the UN Climate Conference, and this is Damon Azali and with Manuel Kiyoyo. Tom, one of the questions that I have in terms of the Kyoto Accords call for a 5% reduction in emissions, whereas I've heard studies from scientists and different countries are talking about they need a 60 to 80% reduction in greenhouse gases just to stop the effects of global warming. What does IEN call for in terms of demands, in terms of the percent that you guys think is necessary to stop the progress of global warming?
If people go to our webpage, www.ienearth.org, you know, we've always made a stand on this issue that what we're calling for is at least a 60% reduction. Okay, and yes, we agree that you know, that the Kyoto Protocol reduction was not enough, and as world leaders are coming here, you know, for this what they call Conference of the Party 11, the 11th session. And this is, in fact, the first session of meeting of the parties of the Kyoto Protocol, since the Kyoto Protocol was ratified in February of this year. And so now one of the main topic here in Montreal is what's going to happen beyond Kyoto,
which expires in 2012, correct?
Right. So now is this where we need to have people of the United States, people from industrialized countries, as well as people from the developing countries, the third world, to be involved in these discussions, because we're going to start talking about going beyond the Kyoto Protocol, what we're calling Kyoto Protocol 2. You know, if there's a political will of people that say we need to go way beyond the limits that were established by Kyoto Protocol, which is what IEN is saying, is that then we need to step up. People need to get involved with these issues.
So there's a perfect reminder for folks out there. This coming Saturday, December 3rd, the Bus Riders Union and Labor Community Strike Center are going to be meeting on the corner of Wilshire and Western to go out on the buses to actually talk to folks about climate justice, about pushing the U.S. to ratify the Kyoto Accords and even go further than that. So if you want more information on that, 213-387-2800. So, Tom, what would that actually mean for even a 5% reduction in energy, or if you were calling for the IEN's demand of 60%, what kind of policies would have to be enacted in terms of the government, and what will we have to do about changing kind of the lifestyle of people who live in the U.S.?
Well, it's going to have to involve some of those initiatives that, you know, some of the people we work with, including that those people in the Los Angeles area, the bus riders union and other people that are doing some good work, is that we have to definitely step up and demand our local officials. You know, and the mayors are coming here. Next week, the mayors are coming here. And there are a few cities that have been pushing their own local versions of the Kyoto Protocol. And some of these cities are going beyond the limits of 5%. And I think that's something that people can rally around, get more involved with these issues, look at you know, different mechanisms to where we can cut our dependence on the fossil fuel economy. That's really where it is right now, and it's that serious. You know, look at other alternatives that are there.
So, Tom, in terms of the overall kind of, you know, united front in terms of pushing the U.S. to sign the Kyoto Accords, what are some of the other progressive forces demanding in terms of demands coming out of the U.N.?
Well, one of those things that, you know, with the Kyoto Protocol, you know, is to push the U.S. to step up. That's the pressure here right now. And, you know, Kyoto Protocol is a first step for the United States, and we're asking people to try to do more around this issue. There's a lot of websites, there's a lot of links around, and, you know, we encourage people to have teach-ins, you know, more education around these issues. You know, with us as indigenous people, you know, we have a number of people here. We had our meeting today, our first Indigenous Peoples Caucus meeting. We have people from Ecuador, from Panama, from Nepal, the Adivasi tribal people of India, and some of the people from Africa and Canada, U.S. And we're all concerned because, you know, a lot of our communities are potentially being displaced from the people in the North Arctic polar region whose lands literally are melting before their eyes, and to our Pacific Islanders whose small island states are going to be getting flooded here, and to the drought conditions with the people in Africa. It is a serious life and death issue, you know, and we have to take that back. In our own home in the United States, you know, concern about heat islands in L.A., you know, what's that going to happen to low-income people? You know, what are the solutions? You know, for us as Indigenous Environmental Network, we're really asking something that's very important, and it reflects our indigenous knowledge, is that all people, all humans, we have to reevaluate what our sacred relation is to our Mother Earth. You know, we're just consuming too much. We're part of an industrialized mindset, and that right now is going nowhere for human people in all life, you know. You know, what does that mean to people in L.A.? What does that mean to people in California? These are serious questions that we have to ask and look for new paradigms.
Well, Tom, it's interesting that you're saying that, because I do think, you know, here at the Strategy Center and the Bus Riders Union, that's, you know, at the core of what we're talking about, that for this debate to be real, it has to really go into our communities and have this conversation, even though in proportion our people, you know, don't waste as much in some ways, or don't consume as much as, let's say, as white America in general. But we think that because we're the ones that are going to be impacted the most and are the ones that are going to feel it the most right in the beginning, that's why the debate has to start with us, in contrast to, I would say, where a lot of environmental groups or even the mainstream debate around climate justice is sort of trying to talk to, you know, pretty much a pretty middle-income person, trying to paint at least a pretty horrendous picture of which it is, of the climate justice having. But in some ways, how does that debate begin even inside our own communities? I think it's a very important debate, because we think that we are the ones that are going to have the most likely have an aptitude to say, we do got to do something about it.
That's right. That's right. And in this discussion, you know, we have to look at all the symptoms of colonization, symptoms of imperialism. We have to look at capitalism. That's one of those words that I find that when I go to environmental meetings and things like that, when I talk about the environmental justice issues that our people are facing, not only native, but non-native as well, people of color, we have to talk about the issues around oppression, and we have to talk about the issues of capitalism. And that's something that the Indigenous Environmental Network is offering in both the EJ movement as well as the environmental movement,
mm-hmm.
Is that we have to really look at where we're going as community, where we're going as a two-legged people, and where are those values that define what our relationship is to the earth, to our mother earth, and what are the necessary values that we are needed to maintain a sustainable community. Now, that doesn't mean that we all have to go back to the teepee way of life, but it means certain values of how we maintain community and what kind of lifestyles we need to develop to maintain that stability, that harmonious balance, okay? That's something that guides at least our network as Indigenous peoples. Some people say, well, that may be a dream or whatever, but it's connected to our prophecies.
Mm-hmm.
Because, long time ago, people said there will be a time when the trees are going to be drying from the top down. And, some of our brothers and sisters of the Haudenosaunee, they said to us at some of these meetings, they said that time is now. The trees in their homeland are drying from the top down.
Mm-hmm.
Some of our people that we met in Northern California said in their prophecies that trying times are coming someday when the snow at Mount Shasta is not going to be there year-round. And now we're starting to experience these glaciers and snow-packed mountain peaks in North America are melting. And that's happening in Kilimanjaro in South Africa. So we are in these trying times that our ancestors talked about. And how do we reach out to the urban people? How do we reach out to the rural people? That's a challenge that we all have together. And that's something I think I wanted to talk about on this radio show.
Well, thank you so much. We're speaking to Tom Goldtooth, who is in Montreal. He's a part of the Indigenous Environmental Network. We'd like to thank you for being on the show. And good luck with your work.
Thank you very much.
So I want to thank everybody for joining this week. We would like to thank our guests, Winona LaDuc, Sunita Narain, and Tom Goldtooth. Today we had music from KRS-One, Duke Ellington, Mercedes Sosa, and the Daz Band. You can listen to previous shows, Voices from the Frontline shows, at www.thestrategycenter.org. And we would like to thank our producer, Alan Minsky, production assistant, Lisa Adler, our engineer, Maggie LaPique. Up next is Susie Weissman, which will be speaking to Philip Gasper, who is the person who nominated Stan Tookie Williams for the Nobel Prizes. So we still want to listen to that and really support the brother to save him from get him clemency. So we will see you next week. Thanks for joining us.